Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm going to talk about some things that we've been talking about for several years in the Western Lake Erie Basin and its importance on the algal blooms. Like you see here in Lake Erie, I have a large algal bloom in Lake Erie. This is from 2011. Okay. And this is the largest extent of an algal bloom that we've had in Lake Erie. And it's caused primarily due to phosphorus loading into the western basin of the lake. And it ranges from about 1.1 to 1.4 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare for total phosphorus, and for soluble phosphorus between a quarter and a third of a kilogram per hectare. Lake Erie was a great poster child for the Clean Water Act in the 1990s. This is some data from Heidelberg University, and you can see in the 1970s for total phosphorus loading, we had very high levels of total phosphorus entering the lake, and through not only point source reductions but non-point source reductions, reduced that below this 11,000 metric ton level set by the Clean Water Act. And around the mid-1990s, we saw it change from a decrease in the soluble phosphorus loading of the lake to an increase in the soluble phosphorus loading in the lake. There were several things that happened at that time, but something that picked up a lot of steam about 4 or 5 years ago was that this is about the time period that the peak in no-till adoption occurred in the western basin of Lake Erie. So since these two events occurred at the same time, a lot of people have made the connection that that's what's causing the increased algal blooms. Kevin King and myself, Kevin works out of Ohio, and we've done a lot of different talks on the Western Lake Erie Basin and phosphorus and algae blooms and agriculture, and we've comprised a list of 28 different reasons that we've been told that are causing the phosphorus problem and the algal problems in Lake Erie. The project that we established a few years ago really focuses on these six, and they're all really interrelated. But the conservation tillage, no-till, reduced till, has an impact on stratification of phosphorus, as does the placement of the fertilizers, the rate, the sources, and the timing. So in the western Lake Erie Basin, our predominant cropping system is a corn-soybean rotation. And on this rotation, most often what we see farmers do is apply inorganic fertilizers as either diammonium phosphate or monoammonium phosphate at 100 pounds per acre or 112 kilograms per hectare. And that gives us either 22 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare or 25 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare every other year. So if you remember back, we were losing about a kilogram per hectare per year. Multiply that by two, and we're losing about 10% of the fertilizer phosphorus that we're putting on our crop fields. So the objectives of this work were to define the potential role that phosphorus stratification plays in phosphorus losses from a corn-soybean rotation, and also to identify if we could find a fertilization strategy that might be able to supply phosphorus while minimizing the phosphorus losses. So we had, here are our basic treatments. We had an unfertilized control plot. Some of the plots we fertilized at 10 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare per year, so every year. Some of the plots we applied at a rate of 24 kilograms per hectare per year, which is kind of the standard practice in the region. We used both DAP and MAP, and also a polyphosphate. And we also looked at placement factors of either surface, knifed in, or disced. And the polyphosphate was only knifed in. And then we also looked at cover crops. This is our research site. It's the Throckmorton Purdue Agricultural Center. It's about 10 miles south of Purdue's campus. We had four reps of each treatment, and again, our rotation was a corn-soybean rotation. Our soil samples were taken right before rainfall simulations. We took a 0 to 5 centimeter and a 5 to 20 centimeter soil samples and looked at water-soluble phosphorus, malic-3, and potassium chloride nitrogen. We used the National PD runoff project protocols for rainfall simulations, 2 meter long by 1 meter wide plot, 70 millimeters per hour, and collected runoff samples every 5 minutes. So these are our fertilizer sources. We have the MAP, DAP, and polyphosphate. The MAP and DAP are 92-93% soluble phosphorus. The polyphosphate comes in a liquid form, so it's 100% soluble. And you can see some differences in our pH ranging from 4.4 to 7.6. So looking at the soils data here, we had on the x-axis here, we have the malic-3 phosphorus at the surface, 0.5 centimeters, against the water-soluble phosphorus. And we can see good correlation between those two sets of values. This is looking at the malic-3 phosphorus in the solid lines at the surface and in the dashed lines at the 5 to 20 centimeter level. And on the x-axis here, we have the rate of application, so unfertilized. This is for the rotation, so it's about 10 kilograms per hectare per year, every other year, so about 20 kilograms per hectare for the rotation and 25. And you can see that there's stratification even in our unfertilized controls, and that's related to previous treatments of the plots prior to our initiation of this study. And even though we disc-tilled these plots here in green, we still got phosphorus stratification in those plots. This is the soil nitrate concentration. And it's interesting to note that there really were no differences in the nitrate concentration in the soil other than where we incorporated our fertilizer, and we got increased nitrate concentrations. Looking at our runoff, so here we have, again, the rate of phosphorus application for the entire rotation. The phosphorus runoff, the soluble phosphorus runoff, and you can see those fertilizers that we surface applied, we got much greater phosphorus, soluble phosphorus loss than what we incorporated, either through knifing in or disking that material in. This is for total phosphorus. And again, not much difference in the materials that we surface applied, even if we look at by the rate of an annual application or a biennial application. The major difference we saw was when we knifed these materials in, we got really low concentrations. When we disked the fertilizer in, we increased the amount of total phosphorus through erosion processes. This is nitrate nitrogen in the runoff. You can see in these two treatments, which are the DAP and the cover crops, not much difference there. DAP with cover crops plus MAP. Here we have just the DAP, and then whenever we disc the DAP in, we increase the amount of nitrogen, nitrate nitrogen in the runoff. Moving into how the soils and the runoff water interacted. So here, I'm going to show you a series of graphs with malic-3 phosphorus in the, at the 0 to 5 surface layer. On the x-axis and on the y-axis, we have the flow-weighted mean concentration of phosphorus in the runoff. And here I've grouped them, grouped the values by the rate of fertilizer. And you can see very low levels of phosphorus in the runoff with our unfertilized. When we fertilized it, the 20 kilograms per hectare every year, we had lower levels of runoff than most of our high rates of fertilizer application. Going to use these same data points and look at the source of the fertilizer. So again, here are our unfertilized. These black dots now are the polyphosphate that we knifed in, so very low levels with that. With The diammonium phosphate, we got a big spread not only in the phosphorus runoff, but also in the malic 3 values. A little bit more runoff there, kind of cross your eyes and look at this from the map, and a really broad range in phosphorus loss values from our cover crop treatment. And here we're looking at placement, all of our high values for phosphorus runoff come from our surface-applied fertilizers. Here are our unfertilized. The red triangles are what's been knifed in, and then these are the values for what we disked in. And again, this is just for soluble phosphorus. Looking at yields, this is for soybeans. Our corn crop, I believe, is still in the field, so I'm looking forward to looking at those values from 2014. But for 2013, really no significant differences by any of the treatments. The only quasi-significance we got here was if we only look at this high rate of fertilizer application at the 0.06 level, we got significantly higher yields from this incorporated treatment than from our surface applied treatments. So in conclusion, even though we disk some of these plots and try to incorporate the phosphorus, we still got stratification of the phosphorus. The reduced rate applying phosphorus on an annual basis instead of every other year did not seem to reduce our phosphorus losses. Leaving the phosphorus on the surface leaves it vulnerable to being lost. And when we look at the data from the incorporation, if we inject the phosphorus, we reduce both the soluble and the total phosphorus. But if we disk it in, we can decrease the soluble, but we balance that with an increase in the total phosphorus. So, thank you. The Malic 3 is kind of the standard for Indiana, and actually, depending on what consultant you use, a lot of the soil testing labs that the samples are sent to, the lab is actually going to run a Malic 3, and if you request a Bray number, they'll take that Malic number and convert it back to a Bray number. Just going with the industry standard there.
Sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Given sort of the severity of that water quality problem and the number of people that were without drinking water mm-hmm. for a while there in, I guess, Toledo, Ohio, are there some actions being taken by regulatory agencies such that these growers will have to use them management plan, or is that coming in the near future, some type of action?
Okay. The question is, given the water quality problems and the shutdown of the drinking water in Toledo, which affected, I forget, 500,000 water customers over this summer, are these farmers going to have to be subject to regulation or nutrient management plans? A lot of these farmers are using just commercial fertilizers. So there's no specific nutrient management plan required for non-CAFO farms as of right now. There are two groups, one of them the International Joint Commission and the other is the Ohio Phosphorus Task Force. Both of those have called for roughly 40% decreases in the total phosphorus loading to Lake Erie for the year, 40% phosphorus decrease for soluble phosphorus for the year, and also it's 37 or 38% decrease in the total phosphorus loading from March to June, which is the critical time period for the harmful algal blooms. I haven't seen a great plan in how that's going to be done. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done to figure out exactly what our issue is and how to correct that. That list of 28 causes is just different things we've heard. And we're kind of systematically trying to go through and research each one of those and see which seems to be the most promising. But there will most likely be significant action taken in the next couple of years for sure.
Okay.